This is Mike Felker, and you are listening to the Apologetic Front Podcast. Hey, it's good to be back. This is Mike Felker, and it's been quite a while. I'd say it's been maybe about 2 months or so since my last podcast, and just had a lot of stuff going on. I'd say the biggest thing I had going on was this May semester class I did for seminary. I'm going to a Reformed Theological Seminary in Atlanta, in case some of you didn't know. And man, it's just really exciting to start my first seminary class, just to get the ball rolling on this, because I've just been wanting to do this for a really long time now, and I just really felt like that's where God wanted me to be, and it's just really exciting to do that class. And it kept me busy, because I guess just doing one whole semester to cram it into 1 month can be pretty strenuous, and there's a whole lot of work and reading and things like that. And even after the class was done, we had a couple assignments we had to turn in, and I turned my last one in this past Friday, so I guess you could say I'm experiencing a sense of freedom after doing that class. But I'm glad it's over, and actually I have my next class, which will be in roughly about a week and a half, I think 2 weeks from this Tuesday. And this class will be a lot more exciting and a lot more challenging, I think, than the last class I did, because this last class, well, it's also my first class. It's called Intro to Pastoral and Theological Study, so just a very introductory course. And this next class I'm going to be taking is on the Gospels, and this should be a really great class as far as giving background information to the Gospels. And I believe the focus is on the Synoptic Gospels, if I'm not mistaken, but it also may incorporate John. But it's got a really good reading list. I think Craig Blomberg's book is on it, and had to spend a whole lot of money on these books, as well as the class, I suppose. I'm paying all of it out of pocket, so that's just going to have to be something I trust the Lord to provide for. But that's just what's kept me busy, and I guess I should assume that once this next class starts, I'm going to be just as busy until I have a little bit of a break. So I guess the only other thing I have going on right now, well, I guess there's two other things going on. First, I just completed a journal article for a new journal that's going to be coming out in publication, and the journal's called The Journal of Trinitarian Apologetics, or something along those lines. And I believe that CARM is going to be heading up or funding the printing for this, if I'm not mistaken, or sponsoring it, something along those lines. But I think Michael Burgos headed the thing up and got it worked out with CARM and whatnot. But he invited me to write a journal article for the journal, and I'm really humbled by that opportunity. And the article is based on pre-existence in the Gospel of Mark. And I don't know why I chose Mark specifically, but I think it's because I got really inspired by Gather Cole's work on pre-existence in the Synoptics. And that was a really great read, just to get all the background info on the Synoptics and Second Temple Judaism and all that. And I guess maybe Mark is one of those books that we take for granted in the area of Christology. Just a lot of us don't want to go there when we want to talk about Jesus and whether he is God, or whether he pre-existed for that matter, because a lot of scholars and a lot of, I guess, religious groups, even conservative religious groups, would call into question the fact that Mark teaches that Jesus pre-existed. So I thought that would be a challenge, and so I just took up the challenge to write about pre-existence in Mark. And so I finished that up about a week ago, and I'm really excited about that, because I haven't really done anything in Christology in a couple of years. I think the last thing I did in Christology was the debate I did with Dave Barron. I don't know what year that was, maybe 2006. So, yeah, been a long time. And so I guess this doing this article really got my feet wet again in Christology and, you know, motivated me a little bit to want to tackle that area again. But I just don't know what kind of format I want to jump in that area because I just I don't really enjoy a lot of the internet discussions that take place on debating the Trinity and Christology and whatnot. There's just a lot of heat, very little clarity, and I don't know. I just feel like that's been run into the ground by too many people. So maybe I'll just limit my interest in Christology to journals, and that way if people want to respond, then maybe they can do so in a published work as well. So, you know, especially if this work has any kind of credibility, this journal, I guess you could say, to where maybe some other people that hold to a different perspective on Christology and pre-existence can, you know, publish their book or article and reference our article, and it will have that kind of credibility. So looking forward to that, just to see if there are any kind of reactions to my journal article, and, you know, maybe this will motivate me to publish more articles, and who knows, maybe even write a book someday. So that was really fun. And lastly, as far as what's going on, is the debate between me and Fred Torres. And we're actually, believe it or not, almost done with the debate. And say almost done in that kind of tone, because it's been going on forever. And as some of my listeners know, we've been doing a kind of modular format to where we just pre-record our opening statements, rebuttals, and whatnot. So we just got our second rebuttals done. So all we have left in the debate is our audience questions and answers. And by the way, if you have not submitted your audience question for this debate, please do so. Just go to my website and just look at one of the most recent posts, and there should be a link there as to how to email your question in. But we really need questions for this for both myself and Fred. That would just be wonderful. That way Chris Date, the host, doesn't have to, you know, make up his own questions. But after that, the audience questions, we just have our closing statements, and then the debate's over. So I think that'll be quite an accomplishment for both myself and Fred after going through this for so long, and I just really hope it's edifying. There's a lot of stuff I really wanted to discuss in the area of Jehovah's Witnesses, since that's my primary area of study right now. Right now, I've just got a voicemail I want to play from someone that left on my Google Voice line, and I've also got a way, way, way overdue email from someone, I guess, who watches my videos. Her name is Sarah. So I want to tackle both of those in this podcast, and there's actually some other things I want to do in another one. I just didn't want to cram too much into this podcast just for various reasons, maybe just because I wanted to keep the flow on kind of a similar vein. So anyway, let me just play this one voicemail. I believe this is from someone named Kim, who is actually studying to be one of Jehovah's Witnesses. So I just wanted to listen to this Google Voice line and respond to it.
Hey, this is Kim Smith, and I was thinking about becoming Jehovah's Witness. And I've seen your video, and I just wanted to know if you are a Jehovah's Witness. Or what did you turn out? Are you one, or you decided not to be one? I'd just like to know. Thanks, and you also have a blessed day. And bye.
Well, that's from Kim Smith, and Kim, I do appreciate you leaving that voicemail for me. And I guess the simple answer to your question is no, I'm not a Jehovah's Witness. I've never been a Jehovah's Witness. And I guess I could go into all the reasons as to why I'm not a Jehovah's Witness, but I just don't know how many details you wanted. But I guess the basic gist as to why is just because I don't think the Bible teaches what the Jehovah's Witnesses believe, by and large. I don't think that Jesus Christ returned invisibly in 1914. I don't see any biblical basis for that whatsoever. And I don't believe that the Jehovah's Witnesses were chosen by Jesus Christ directly in 1919. And again, I know no biblical basis for that. And the Watchtower being God's sole channel of communication on earth today, I see no biblical basis for that. The blood doctrine, I see no biblical basis for that. And, you know, we can just go on down the list and talk about various doctrines. The one I'm really interested right now and debating right now is the two-class theology, where 144,000 Jehovah's Witnesses will live forever in heaven, and the rest of Jehovah's Witnesses will live forever on a paradise earth. I think that is an unbiblical doctrine that I strongly disagree with. So I couldn't be a Jehovah's Witness in light of that. And also, just the Watchtower themselves and the level of integrity they have, their history, their claims. There's just so many things about this organization that would keep me from being one of Jehovah's Witnesses in good conscience. And this isn't something I just came to a conclusion of overnight. I actually spent several years in study with the Jehovah's Witnesses, as well as going to meetings. And this wasn't so much because I was actually interested in becoming one. I was more interested from a research perspective. It was just, that's a whole nother story. But at the end of my studying, I feel like I could very well conclude in good conscience that the Jehovah's Witnesses were not who they claimed to be. So I hope that answers your question, Kim. And I would just encourage you to continue your search for the truth and don't violate your conscience. If it turns out that you just don't think the Jehovah's Witnesses are right, then don't join them. Don't do it. Don't join them just because they're great people and that you have peace and security there. Do it for the right reasons. Do it because you want to honor God. You want to honor Christ. And you want to follow the truth wherever it may lead. So please continue to do what you're doing. Read the scriptures. Check it against what the Watchtower teaches. And I hope that answers your question, Kim. And if you have any further questions, feel free to drop me an email or drop me another voicemail, and I would be more than happy to address it. And next, I'm just going to an email that's way overdue. Sarah sent this email back in June 12th, I believe. So, Sarah, I sincerely apologize for not getting to this sooner. And I guess I got caught up in my class and whatnot. So, better late than never. So, let me just read your email, Sarah, and hopefully I can address some of it. And a lot of this is just you expressing your opinion. They're not necessarily questions, so I may not jump in too much, just maybe where there's something noteworthy to say. You start off with saying, I think maybe in my case, I am an exception as far as the witnesses go. I am not judgmental for the most part, although I may say judgmental things, such as apostate questioning and such. It is my sneaky way of finding out if you are crazy, no offense. Not because you have a difference of opinion, but to see if you knew what I meant by that statement. Okay, I wonder if all Jehovah's Witnesses do this as a sneaky way to finding out if I'm crazy, you know, by calling me an apostate and whatnot, because I've gotten called an apostate, you know, more times than I can count. So that's kind of an interesting insight, and I just wonder if other Jehovah's Witnesses call me apostate just because they want to find out if I know what it means or know if I'm crazy. So I'm glad you don't find me crazy, Sarah. Thank you. You continue. There are some very outdated watchtowers that I am aware of. I do have a copy of one that used the cross in the watchtower itself, and then later changed because it did not go along with Bible teachings. This is one example to my knowledge. Well, I would say, Sarah, that's one just very small example out of many. I think that would be more larger and noteworthy examples of what the Watchtower used to teach and no longer does. And I've even heard a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses say the whole cross issue isn't really a big deal. And I mean, I pretty much agree with that, and I don't even really care to discuss that. So what I would recommend, Sarah, is don't just look at examples like the cross. Look at all these other examples, and look at examples previous to the year 1919, because these are going to be the things that the Watchtower was teaching and practicing while Jesus Christ himself chose them to be his sole channel of communication on earth. So this is one of those instances where you just need to look into this and see, is the Watchtower consistent with who they claim to be for themselves? So I think that's the real noteworthy thing to consider here. You continue. I think because we are all imperfect, even an organization for the right thing in my eyes can have mistakes or errors. Jesus was perfect. We are not. I fully agree with that. But I don't think the issue is, can an organization make mistakes or not? I mean, I make mistakes. My fellow Christians make mistakes. My church makes mistakes. But what you need to consider, again, is compare the Watchtower's claims of themselves against all the mistakes they've made and the types of mistakes they've made. Are they being consistent when they make those claims? We have to do a little investigation on my part to showcase a little better what I mean as far as independent thinking. And like I said, maybe I am an exception. I was always taught by my parents to search for the truth, to make the truth my own. My father in particular was raised a born-again Christian and on his own found the religion he wanted to pursue. My mother learned from her mother and so on. I was brought up with 7 siblings of 4, which are adopted among us, were several foster kids coming in and out of her house. My parents were loving people because they wanted to be. No one told them, I do not know what you mean by, okay, I think I need to back up because I guess we're starting on a different thought. I guess I just missed that there. So you continue. I do want to know what you mean by teach the truth to Jehovah's Witnesses. I would like to know what religion you belong to. Well, let me back up here. What I mean by teach the truth to Jehovah's Witnesses, I mean teach them what the Bible actually says. For example, you brought up being born again a moment ago. The Jehovah's Witnesses don't believe that they are born again by and large. They only believe that the 144,000 are born again. So that's something I want to teach Jehovah's Witnesses, that they must be born again. That's something that Jesus says that you need to have done if you want to enter into the kingdom of heaven, or if you want to see the kingdom of heaven, you have to be born again. So that's one of the many truths that I would want to teach to Jehovah's Witnesses. Next, you say, I would like to know what religion you belong to, if you do or don't. Just curious. Well, that's kind of a loaded question there as far as what religion I belong to. I would just tell you that I'm a Christian and I belong to Jesus Christ. He is the way, the truth, and the life. And so that's who I always want to identify myself with, is the person of Jesus Christ. Now, if you want to know what church I go to, well, I'm not sure if that's information I necessarily want to disclose, just like you might not want to disclose the address of the Kingdom Hall that you go to. But as far as my beliefs are concerned, I guess you'd have to just ask me what specifically you believe on these specific issues, and then you could maybe have a gauge of what I actually believe. You continue. Just curious, it is just something evangelicals often say, or born-again Christians say, or they say they are saving us. No offense. I do not want to be saved by any humans, although I do listen to them, and I am not naive with my own religion. Well, I'm definitely not trying to save anyone, and maybe there are some born again Christians, as you say, who claim to be trying to save you. Well, I can't speak for them. I can only speak for myself. But I mean, I want you to be saved. I want as many people as possible to be saved. But I can't save anyone. That's a sovereign work of the Holy Spirit. All I can do is present the truth and allow a seed to be planted, and then the Holy Spirit can do the rest. So hopefully that's clear. Next, you say, as far as the homosexual comment, a true JW is in no place to judge anyone. Yes, there is what I call a modern-day shunning in the Kingdom Hall, but I think that should be more often more left for child molesters or people who do not demonstrate examples of Christ, and there are some congregations that abuse this. Well, let's first talk about the judging anyone. Maybe that's just your opinion that a true JW is in no place to judge anyone, but that's far from what the Watchtower actually teaches. Jehovah's Witnesses definitely do make judgments, and in fact, we all make judgments. Even your statement that JWs have no place to judge people, that in and of itself is a judgment. So what we need to really talk about is not that, you know, Christians should or shouldn't judge. It's just maybe the severity of the judgment, or is the judgment based on biblical principles and biblical teachings? But next you talk about what modern-day shunning should be, and you said that should be left for child molesters and people who do not demonstrate examples of Christ. And yeah, I actually pretty much agree with that. Now, I could definitely elaborate more, but I don't think there is any basis for shunning someone who maybe left the organization because they couldn't hold on to the 1914 teaching, or that Jesus is Michael the Archangel. And I'm sure a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses would say, oh, well, they would never get disfellowship for that. Well, I actually beg to differ on that, and I could actually share published examples. But then again, I guess you could argue that that person was being dishonest. But nonetheless, that's my opinion. I do think that Jehovah's Witnesses can be disfellowshipped for a teaching in opposition to the Watchtower. And I don't think they should be disfellowshipped for that. But again, that's a whole other issue, and that's something I would have to really develop to explain what the biblical parameters are for disfellowshipping. But yeah, by and large, as far as what I think people should be disfellowshipped for would be for just gross examples of unrepentant sin. And also, as far as teaching goes, people who are causing an uproar and being disrespectful in the congregation, I think there can be a place for disfellowshipping in that. So let's continue. You can say to a person door to door, that is what I believe the Bible teaches, and who is in line for the paradise earth in Jehovah's eyes. However, for example, a person who is gay may have a better heart than a person who reads the Bible every day or is always at the meetings. I feel Jehovah knows a person's heart, and if they feel what they are doing is right, why would a just God destroy a person for it and not allow them to enjoy living forever in peace? As a JW, this may not coincide with what the society teaches, but it's what my Bible teaches. I would quote a scripture, but I will maybe save that for another time if that is okay. Well, I do admire, Sarah, your words there. Even from my perspective, I don't actually agree with that, but I would definitely say that a Jehovah's Witnesses, they would flat out disagree with you on this, as far as what you said about someone who is a homosexual, and you know, if they're a good person and they feel what they're doing is right, why would God destroy that person? Well, what I would say, Sarah, is that God is going to bear his wrath against anyone who has sinned against him. And it's only those who have faith in Jesus Christ and have his righteousness imputed to them and have his atonement applied to them, whereby God's wrath can pass over them and they are no longer in judgment. In fact, they have peace with God. And so that's not based on their own righteousness. That's based on someone else's righteousness. That is the righteousness of Jesus Christ. So I definitely think we have a differing view there, and I know for a fact that Jehovah's Witnesses would have to have a differing view there. But what I would say just as a word of encouragement, Sarah, and again, I thank you for taking the time to write and to listen to this if you're listening, I would just really just question, you know, whether you're living as a consistent Jehovah's Witness when you know very well that they would just flat out disagree with you and maybe even disfellowship you if they knew, you know, what you believed in these areas. So I guess ask yourself, you know, do you want to be a part of that group to where if they knew what you believe, they would disfellowship you and shun you and not say a word to you? So hopefully, Sarah, that will be, I don't know, a decent response to what you've asked here. And if you have any other questions, you know, feel free to ask me, and I would be more than happy to address those. So everyone else who listened, thank you very much. And the next thing I want to discuss on the next podcast is actually a phone call that took place between a gentleman and someone at the Watchtower headquarters on Jesus Christ being the mediator for the 144,000. So it was a really interesting phone call, and I definitely want to address that on the next podcast. So thanks again, and see everyone next time. Thank you for listening. If you have a comment, question, or criticism that you would like to have played on this podcast, please call 678-208-9153 and leave a message. Or go to apologeticfront.com and you can reach me through the contact tab at the top of the page.